Hi, this is Paul. I wanted to give a little bit of visibility to this conversation that Grim Grizz did with Kale. And I listened to the whole thing. I thought it was an outstanding conversation. Part of the difficulty of this little corner is that there's just way too much stuff to keep up with. And so sometimes when there's something that happens that I think is outstanding, I want to pay a little bit of attention to it and talk about it. Well, that's what I do anyway. So let's play a little bit.
I did recall I was steering toward the Children of Set issue and trying to explain that more clearly.
Right.
And okay, so I begin it with the War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In which whether or not the actual human beings were convinced and fooled by a radio broadcast that aliens were attacking, afterward, the notion that the human beings were so foolish and convinced was sold to the public. Yeah. And then the newscaster era began as television and set came onto the scene. And the chief spell that the newscaster cast is the same as the Voldemort is dead spell.
Yeah.
That everything is, there's lots of horrible stuff, but we have it under control. Just keep doing what you're doing. And that worked because the only real intercommunication aside from that was people's letters to each other.
Right.
The only counter narrative, but that was up until then, the dominant narrative was reinforced via the churches. Mm-hmm. And then as television sets became, worship of sets became normalized. And that's the chief function of set, is to normalize various behaviors in the culture.
Now, I think a lot about the fact that the way that mass communication has sort of continued to bubble up. If you think about how most people lived their lives, especially if they were not in a city, their main environment was, for lack of a better word right now, let's call it nature and the rhythms of nature. The rhythms of the season, planting and growing, animal husbandry, the progressions in life in terms of childhood, adolescence, adulthood, middle-aged, old life, if in fact they live that long. These dominant rhythms permeate one's life and permeate one's attention. One of the things that I noted last night when I was doing my men's Bible study on Exodus, if you read the Exodus story, the reason to let my people go is that they might worship God in the desert. Now, nobody debates that talking point. It's clear in the text. But as I was rereading this story with my men's group, all we do in our men's group is we basically read through and we talk about it. And if anybody has questions, and I'll usually give some comments and we just kind of go through. And for me, it's always a good opportunity to just reread a text that is familiar to me, but it's just good to read it again and read it again and read it again. And what struck me this time when I read it was just how the story isn't, oh, Israel is slaves and they're suffering. Well, yeah, that's a story. The story, but that's not the emphasis of the story. The reason why they need to leave is that they might worship God. That's the reason given again and again and again and again. Now, Moses is accosted by God in a sense with the burning bush, and then goes down and, you know, back and forth to Pharaoh, and then the people will come out and they will come to Sinai. And what's interesting is that, well, there's a few interesting things about it. That again, the point is worship, which again, if you listen to sort of the way this is developed between, let's say, Jonathan Peugeot and Jordan Peterson, the point is attention. And Grizz's point here is, you know, Set is a god of attention. And
I remember, like, the norm, like, well, it's normalized. The dominant narrative was reinforced via the churches. Mm-hmm. And then as television sets became, worship of sets became normalized. And that's the chief function of Set, is to normalize various behaviors in the culture. I remember, like the norm, like Will and Grace, for example, was a big huge point of normalization.
Way. Huge, absolutely massive. Way underrated.
And that Joey from Friends guy normalizing masturbation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like if you go back into, there's like ads and stuff from the 30s I've seen tweeted by that show like masturbation as a degeneracy. Mm-hmm. And that got lost. The fact that we had access to porn was more important than porn as a weapon.
Right.
And these things, but now we're this deep in it. But some of us realize we're in it. And
yeah. Right.
It's so interesting how, so they go into the desert to worship. And Greg, you know, makes a point in the video. I mean, this almost sometimes seems like a pretext. And I could understand very much how he would read that. And it isn't really explained. So then they go into the desert. And of course, there's the big Sinai incident. Or what does it mean that they worship God? Well, a lot of it is actually they receive the law and they obey the law. That the law becomes the focus of their attention in terms of how to live. Now, obviously, coming from a Protestant perspective, worship means... Well, it's interesting because I had a couple of really good conversations today. One is coming out from Thomas, who is part of the German Breakwater Festival. We've had two excellent conversations. The first conversation was good. I thought the second conversation we had today was tremendous. There's going to be a third conversation before the festival. I really like this practice of having multiple conversations beforehand to sort of get up to speed. But, oh shoot, where was I going with this? Attention. It's interesting how this very interesting ecumenical corner, the focus when you hear from the Orthodox is almost always the liturgy, the divine liturgy, the liturgy. The focus from the Roman Catholics tends to be the Eucharist. Focus from the Protestants tends to be the Bible, paying attention to the Bible, learning the Bible, knowing the Bible. I remember Rod Dreher, as of course he went through his own transformation from Methodist into Catholic into Orthodox, talked about the fact that one of the things he continued to remain at least impressed about evangelicals, and Peugeot said almost the identical thing, at least evangelicals get to know their Bible when they're young, because that's the focus of their attention. The focus of their attention is the Bible. The focus of the attention of the Roman Catholics is the Eucharist. The focus of attention of the Orthodox is the liturgy. And so you very much have this attention. And of course, when Israel goes into the desert, they're not holding worship services. When the Sabbath rolls around, Israel doesn't sort of necessarily congregate and sing a bunch of songs and then listen to a chat by Moses about, you know, commentary on what he has just received. Now, of course, in the transition from temple worship to synagogue, it's sort of a Protestant move in that Torah replaces temple. And there's the focus on the Torah, to memorize it, to take it into your heart, and of course also to observe it and obey it. And that's also the same in Protestant Christianity and evangelicalism. But again, this business about attention. And one of the things that I've thought a long time about, and I've mentioned it, I think, on occasion in my videos, is just how it's absolutely incumbent upon us to try to get a global picture of the world. Doug Wilson videos come up very regularly in my feed where he's complaining about something of the state of the world. Part of the reason I played Meet John Doe in my video about Oliver Anthony, is that this is a common thing. Part of consciousness is that in one way you have to sort of, in a binary way, color your world. Politicians and political polls do this all the time. Right track, wrong track. And what that requires is in a moment to try to get a global binary assessment of the world. Now that's, of course, the lowest resolution, just the binary, yes, no, good, bad, on, off. And then it goes from there. And I think Grizz's point is powerful in that slowly as our power to create, to represent, to narrate. The video I was going to do today, but just it's too really kind of difficult to pull off, was just noticing the spirits at war over the Russell Brand incident, where almost before anybody knows anything about anything, we already know what we think about this matter. Well, and even we're not even clear about what we, you know, actually what we think about this matter in terms of the matter itself. It's just this reactive, reflexive thing. Now, when the Russell Brand thing hit, somebody sent me a link to Conspirituality. Now, this is much more sort of, this is much more of a, at least this episode, I haven't listened to very many of these. It's come up every now and then, this podcast, but more of a, let's say an anti-manosphere, anti, so this group is very much sort of against, and again, just notice the binary, against a lot of what, let's say, people would look at my channel and say, oh, you're a Jordan Peterson fanboy because you do so many things about Jordan Peterson. I like Jordan's work, and I continue to pay attention to Jordan because I think his work is helpful. But, you know, get categorized in that way. So this is going to make a categorization in this. And I know a bunch of you are going to get triggered by this, but we come to the internets for the triggers.
That's his brand, so to speak. In prior episodes, we've also talked about the neurotic speech that so many of the male influencers we cover seemed to get locked into through a process of self-entrancement in their different ways.
Now, there's a lot of, oh, how shall we say it? There's a lot of convenient stereotyping in this critique, but I don't think the critique is without merit, and I don't think it's limited to the people that he's pointing at. I think the therapeutic also has, let's listen to it, then let's critique it.
Russell Brand, Alex Jones, Jordan Peterson, Tim Pool, Matt Walsh, Andrew Tate, Ben Shapiro, they all have it. These are all men who cannot bear to pause, let alone be interrupted. And given the nature of digital space, they never have to stop. They throw off this sense that if they closed their fire hoses, that their fragile selves would burn to the ground. Now, that,
I'm not going to speak about everybody on that list, but it seems really hard to consider Jordan Peterson or Ben Shapiro fragile.
In Brand, this improvisational tick can ascend into something that sounds like spiritual ecstasy. But the thing about the fire hose of charismatic speech is that it can't just be water or sounds. It really does have to be made up of words and phrases and ideas, but the quantity is so high that the quality and coherence cannot possibly keep up. So that brings me to the second main observation we've made about Brand and everyone who works this particular kind of shtick, that the content is...
Notice how global this is. And what's interesting is that everybody's supposed to know exactly who is in or out of this globalness. So let's look at the winsome war going on in between Christians. So if there's sort of the... And, you know, he probably doesn't even know who Doug Wilson is, but Doug Wilson, if you look at his blog and May blog, and somebody pointed out quite rightly, I said, yeah, that, you know, I'm really impressed by how he did. Somebody said, you know, he's reading that. Eh, good point. It's pretty carefully crafted, and he's a good reader, and so it's ba 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 ba. And I think he's got a point to the fact that there's something deep within us that sort of reacts that frenetic language that holds us there. And again, I'm a minister, and so I'm a preacher. And so what one of the things that you learn when you learn rhetoric is, in fact, the art of rhetoric, that the pause, the moment to reflect, making the point strongly. I mean, this is all, of course, rhetoric. Now, to totally dismiss these people and say their mouths are working so fast, their brains can't keep up. So that certainly happens. And again, I'm not a Russell Brand fan. for a whole variety of reasons. But even one thing that he played in this video about, it was rather theological. We'll see if I can find it. I hate it when I don't press the record button. So there's a preemptive, Russell Brand is notified that this article is coming out. And so Conspirituality says, well, he's made some preemptive strikes to sort of save his own reputation. And then he does this.
Now, before I move on to the background and context I mentioned, there is one other preemptive move that Brand made against this story, and he posted it on TikTok 2 days before his blanket denial uploaded to YouTube.
Christ's final words, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." Of course, in this moment, Christ is referring to his own execution at the hands of the Roman judiciary and Pilate famously washing his hands of our Lord and Saviour. But its relevance in that moment is very particular. Of course, the sacrifice of a living God is a massive, seismic, epochal and defining human event. But is it not more relevant right now? Because as Joseph Campbell says, what does it matter if Christ dies on the cross 2,000 years ago, if we are not continually dying and reborn unto ourselves, that we may experience each moment anew? Is this not exactly what Lord Buddha is referring to? Remain awake, remain in the present. Perhaps what is meant, or one interpretation that I might offer you, of Christ's words, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do," is that most people, most of the time, are unconscious. Forgive them, they know not what they do. They don't know why they're saying that. They don't know why they're doing that. They don't know why they're driving that way. They don't know why they're treating the planet that way. They don't know why they're talking about one another in that way. Isn't it our duty to, like Christ, awaken from the flesh body and into the transcendent being of light, the elevated, escalating, transcending individual? Let me know in the comments if you agree with this interpretation, that what we truly must become is conscious in this moment. Now.
Okay, so with these two clips on board, I can get into the first core theme that we here on the podcast have focused on in previous coverage. And that's that Brand is a consummate bullshitter. And I mean that in the sense put forward by American philosopher Harry Frankfurt. On any given subject, Brand might be lying, Brand might not be lying. You can't really tell, and it doesn't really matter because he doesn't seem to care. He's not working his jaws in relation to any respect for what is true or useful. He speaks to seize attention, create an impression, and weave a spell. Here's what Frankfurt says about the difference between lies, truth, and bullshit. Quote, "Someone who lies and someone who tells the truth are playing on opposite sides, so to speak, in the same game. Each responds to the facts as he understands them, although the response of the one is guided by the authority of the truth, while the response of the other defies that authority and refuses to meet its demands. The bullshitter ignores these demands altogether. He does not reject the authority of the truth, as the liar does, and oppose himself to it. He pays no attention to it at all. By virtue of this, bullshit is a greater enemy of the truth than lies are." Now, in his ninth hour YouTube preemptive defense, we hear one valence of Brand's bullshit, the Gish Gallop patter of urgent pivots, allusions, vagaries, and non sequiturs. This is Brand's manic mode. It's pressurized and claustrophobic, a wall of words that can feel physically overpowering. In the show notes, I'm going to link to my colleague Derek's close reading of one such Brand scenario.
Okay. Here's the thing. This guy says that this is BS because it's just about attention. It's not BS. Now, you might think the content of the religion is BS. Brand regularly, if you listen, you don't have to listen to a lot of Brand. If you know anything about religion, to hear he's got sort of a Gnostic perennialism that imagines that people are sort of asleep, and then once you get this initiation, which sort of comes through Brand, watching him on Rumble or YouTube or listening to him or maybe doing psychedelics or something, then you wake up to realize that corporations are trying to get in your pocket, media is trying to do a snow job on you, and If you listen to him, you can see through. Now, whether or not to the degree that Russell Brand himself sees through, you can have that debate. But the argument is not, I mean, the point is not that Russell Brand doesn't know what he's saying. You might not believe what he's saying, but it's not that he's just making up gibberish and he's completely, well, whether or not he believes this, again, you can't see into your heart. You got ministers out there who don't believe what they sling. You've got all kinds of people out there who don't believe what they sling. And, you know, you're going to need other evidence than that besides just that this kind of evidence doesn't align with your narrative. Therefore, these people are disingenuous. No, there are many other possibilities besides just that. Part of the point that Grim Grizz is making is that there's this evolution of the creation of. Now, we have lots of different words for it. Our language isn't super well put together. And this is part of what, hopefully, I'm going to get a hold of the conversation I did with Thomas that I'm going to meet in Germany. The creation of these spirits, of these collective bodies that are sort of waging war throughout the culture. And right now, there's sort of narrative and counter-narrative. And I put in that video about, If you haven't watched the video, I know the title about John Stott on a bicycle seemed a little off and a little strange, but the video really is about causes, because right now in our culture there's sort of three main causes. There's lots and lots and lots of causes, but sort of three buckets I put them in often. Sort of liberal social justice, conservative social justice, and evangelical salvationism, and the priority to which people stack these things tends to say a lot about where they put their attention and where they focus. But of course, the printing press comes along and now suddenly attention can be marshaled and directed over a much larger group of people. No longer does it have to be focused on a speech or focused on a narrative that people are sort of carrying around and participating in their head. Now, this can be sustained with pamphlets and books. And pamphlets are at least as important as books, especially in the Reformation period. And then, of course, newspapers come. And newspapers are tremendously powerful things. It's not an accident that Meet John Doe is set in a newspaper context. Radio really hadn't quite. Radio and movies were kind of coming up there. But all the attention was on the ways in which newspapers were creating these political extended bodies. And, of course, just do a little bit of research on the role of the Hearst newspapers and getting in the Spanish-American War, for example. Remember the Maine. And then, of course, television comes, and television is more powerful because now you have a voice, and now you have Walter Cronkite sitting behind a desk, and now you have all of the tools, of course, Pravda in the Soviet Union, which means truth. You have all of these tools, and so you have all of this formation, and then Grim Grizz talks about sort of the normalization of all of this. And now with there's a real panic with respect to, well, what happens with social media? Because now counter-narrative people have their own platforms, and these platforms can get large, and they can use rhetoric. They can talk fast and blah 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 blah. And oh, they're BSing people, or they can talk smoothly, and they can be so calm and so pastoral. Now again, as a pastor, I can use both modes. I have to use both modes. It's called rhetoric. It's called speech. It's called relationality. It doesn't mean it's always BS. That's not what it means. Now, just to sort of look to the other side, someone also on Twitter pointed this out to me.
Today, I want to talk about the Russell Brand situation and some unique insights I have that I've been saving for a grand reveal in the book that I've been writing for many years now. So I sort of came to the depressing realization this week that it's probably just never going to be finished. Here I am talking to you, telling you about it now. A lot of people have been surprised to see the British government today file this letter to TikTok and to Rumble asking to demonetize Russell Brand.
Now, we talked about this a little bit. I'll probably clip it and put it on the channel. A little ad hoc conversation I had with Sam and with Luke, and you know, again, Sam and I are like, this whole Russell Brand thing is weird. Now, again, it might be that there's some mastermind back there who's running a conspiracy. There's a great book out there about the conspiracy that Peter Thiel ran against Gawker Media. It's a terrific little book. And if you're skeptical about the reality of conspiracies, it's a great book because he just goes through the conspiracy that they hatched and pulled off and in fact won. But often in terms of these collective bodies that are out there, you don't need a conspiracy. Everybody just falls in line as instantiations of the spirit to walk in lockstep according to what this spirit directs. There'll be more of this kind of talk in the rough draft for Sunday sermon this week.
Brand over these allegations against him and YouTube demonetizing him. And a lot of people are, there's a lot of pointing and sputtering that I see, a lot of surprise, a lot of.
Now the YouTube demonetizing is kind of funny too. That's sort of like this half step. And I don't know Russell Brand's financial situation. Maybe he blew all that money on hookers and blow when he was working in the mainstream media. I mean, there's just so much hypocrisy to go around in all of these things. But they didn't take him down. They demonetized him. And it's like, Now, on one hand, that makes sense because advertisers are sensitive. Advertisers are extremely sensitive to the spirits in the world. They're extremely sensitive to public opinion is going this way or public opinion is going that way. And you know, I pointed that out in the Snyder-Peterson conversation where they're talking about the atmosphere, which is so funny because the New Testament talks about the spirits of the air. Yeah, they're all there in the atmosphere that Netflix is worried about. We're not going to do this, or we call it tone deaf. We have all these different ways of talking about the ways that these spirits collectively inhabit our minds.
Shock, and what does one thing have to do with another? And, you know, isn't that terrible and silly and that they would try to connect his revenues on the platform to off-platform activity? You have to understand the op here and how far back it goes and how it's structured. I wish you guys could have been there in 2017 when all the consensus building architecture was happening. There's a reason that I use the phrase censorship industry. It's not based on something I came up with. It's something they came up with. After the geopolitical turbulence.
Now, again, there doesn't need to actually be a corporate room that they all sit in. There doesn't need to be phone calls. Again, read that conspiracy book. I should find out where it is. It's entitled Conspiracy by Ryan Holiday, and it's a great book. And you don't actually need to have that. Via the spirits, people just act together in what can look, for all intents and purposes, like a coordination, but it's actually a coordination of a spirit. And it's you don't actually need human communication back and forth. It's, you know, think about the NBA. If you've got two guys on a fast break who've done this a number of times, they're sort of one in spirit on this fast break. They don't have to stop and say, now I'm going to go this way. And in fact, it's best if it's not intentional at all. This is just what people do it. They're just moved by this spirit and off they go.
The events of 2016, when alternative news online, when non-mainstream alternative populist news online became more powerful than mainstream news in terms of tilting elections and democratic outcomes and forming whole of society consensuses, such as with Brexit.
In other words, when sort of the monopoly of certain spirits is broken and lots of spirits come through. Now, again, happens in the Protestant Reformation, happens in the Great Awakenings. I mean, so much of what has happened in history is, in fact, you have these power blocks and they get broken. It's chaos and order.
I'm just gonna let these people pass with Brexit and with the Trump election. The foreign policy establishment's enforcement and basically conspiracy arm. These are secrecy clandestine services. If you don't want conspiracy theories about them, maybe we shouldn't allow them to be conspiracy agencies. But they got together, they did a consensus building process after the 2016 election. And I've got all the clips and source documents for this. I've more than I can possibly publish. Where they formulated a plan where they looked at alternative news as an industry and an ecosystem rather than as an individual, individually emergent phenomena.
Okay, and let's say the guy is just full of it and he doesn't have the receipts on these meetings and anything. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Because people naturally, as intuitively, as these two NBA players on a fast break today, they're going to pass the ball back and forth and somebody's going to dunk it. As intuitively, groups are working. And you have to ask, well, how are they on the same page? Why? And you can use all sorts of different frameworks for it. You can talk about they're participating in a shared narrative. They're being moved by the same spirit. I can put it in language that people listen to now and say, oh, that's very comfortable. I totally understand that. Because again, the language sort of comes from above, and then you can see the spirit if you know its name. Oh, they're participating in the same narrative. Okay, now we can understand the spirit because we know its name. It's participation in narrative. Or it's, these two share the same spirit. That's language we use. It's still in our culture. But if I dare to sort of push it and say, yes, that spirit is moving through both of them, suddenly we freeze up. Sort of this post-enlightenment traumatic reaction that we have. But that is the language we have, and that is the mechanism that's working. You don't need to have any meetings. You don't need to have people actually together.
Which is to say that they said there are a relatively small number of these alternative news institutions. There's a huge number of alternative news stories that they...
Okay, now what he's talking about again is a hierarchy that... Anybody can have their little space on Twitter and YouTube and Twitch and whatever to tell their little stories and have their little takes. And, you know, there's I wouldn't say there's a million Grim Grizz. There's only one Grim Grizz. It's a pretty unique guy. But at the same time, his audience is pretty small, so you don't really have to worry about them. But just like there's just a few mass medias by virtue of attention and hierarchy and the way these platforms are constructed now, even though there's multiple. Even though there's multiple people in it, there are not that many spirits that are actually working through us here.
That they spit out, if we kill them at the institutional level, that's much easier than killing each and every story. Which is to say that it's that the message was everywhere, and it was hard to stop each individual message. But there were a relatively few number they identified of emergent messengers, both chronically and then, you know, pure.
And again, it's a super smart idea. And, you know, the degree that people thought, yeah, you know, there's just some key ones if we sort of take them out once they hit a certain size. And now, again, most of us who watch this Russell Brand story are sort of the thought that Russell Brand might have done this, given exactly what he talked about and how, in fact, he was celebrated for doing what. Yeah, gambling. I'm shocked. They say there's gambling here. Of timing. I mean, again, there's dozens of people have made these points. I don't need to make these points. Again, because the spirits are making the points through the people. And there's only so many of these spirits. And there's only so many of these people. There's near infinite news stories. But they all sort of seem to align. And they're all about the same thing. I'm really indebted to Mark Lefebvre. I'm sure he'll want a price for that debt. That's higher than I wish to pay. But, you know, I'm reading the American Nations book and just watching sort of the narratives that I've had about the American Revolution really complexify. Thinking about, oh, okay. Because I always wondered about sort of the shape of the American Revolution and the timing of the American Revolution. And I listened to the rest of his history's excellent treatment of the American Revolution from a British perspective, which I thought was fascinating. But when, of course, he sort of walks through with respect to, in many ways, the different principalities in America, the Yankees, the Midlanders, the borderlands people, that's Appalachia, the Southern the southern groups, and suddenly with all these principalities now and all their different alignments with respect to the British and their various interests and how they were divided and how they're together, it was kind of like, oh, when you understand, have the names of the principalities and an understanding of who they are and what their character is, the way these things flow just makes a lot more sense.
Periodically on an emergent basis. They said, how do we kill the messengers? Because that's the easiest way to kill the message. Well, the easiest way to do so is to look at alternative news online as being an industry with revenues and to cripple its capacities. Now, this is an important term here that I talk about a lot, and a lot of people might not catch the significance of it.
And again, this is a good point because, and anybody's given their little two cents here, and here I am in my office at work, and you know, I've got kind of a nice camera and a good lens and a decent microphone, so this the production qualities are okay, but it's not sort of the, you know, now Jordan Peterson anywhere in the world calls up Daily Wire and says, I want to make a video about Dutch farmers or Canadian truckers, and whoop, there's the Daily Wire production, and they go into action and they do the editing. And yeah, you know, if that gets big enough to sort of, but back to the conspirituality thing. Oh, well, wait a minute. When you're talking about either the man-centered bah, 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 or let's say the feminine soft-spoken thing, what about all the subtle hints by production values of a decent camera and some decent sound and wearing a blue shirt and all those things are there too. All those things are there too. So, you know, if you have some enemies, find ways to take them out. And again, with the Russell Brand thing, it might be the case that absolutely no one, again, Sam says, you know, George Soros calls. I mean, who's the person that calls and sets this up? Is it possible that someone decided to get him? It's possible. Is it the case, like conspirituality says, that maybe it just took 4 years for these women to kind of decide they wanted to do this, especially because they'd see him on TV all day, they'd see him on YouTube, and they have this, you know, very bad episode with him, and so finally they get up the nerve, and it happened that too, you know, it's innumerable ways that this could happen, but again, are these collective bodies, there are these spirits, there's these things that are moving in, and that's what's moving through the culture. We talk about ideas. Ideas are sort of this modern way of, you know, the Jordan Peterson, Carl Jung. You know, people don't have ideas. Ideas have people. Yeah, it's basically the same thing.
But it's called capacity building. This is a concept in nonprofit world, which refers to the pumping up of financial resources and personnel and technological abilities. But number one is financial resources. So, for example, when the State Department wants to run an operation of...
Okay, so that's you get the idea. We understand where he's going.
Right, right. Whether you want to acknowledge it out loud or not, you know, we're in it. And it's really important, you know, to use the we. You know, every now and again, I get on the Twitter and I will say, like, we're lost, we're a mess, you know. I'll use a we, right? And I'm doing that, and then people are like, well, I'm fine, like, I don't do that sort of stuff. And I'm like, well, okay, I get it, you know, but the reason why I'm using the we is that we, like, it's all happening to us, whether you want to acknowledge that there's an us or a we in the first place. Like, it's happening to us. I mean, and it's hard for me to avoid that truth because I teach kids, right? And so, you know, I'm in charge of watching kids during the day, you know, so it's, you know, if I were being cynical, and I'm not a cynical person, but if I were being cynical, I'm just a sort of a glorified, sort of leveled up babysitter. At least that's how some people conceive of it. But it's, so at any rate, I get to notice a lot of stuff, you know, and one of the things that you notice is that the kids, you know, the kids are absolutely swimming in it.
And it in this sentence is...
It is. I mean, it could be anything. I mean, we could talk about pornography. We could talk about masturbation. We could talk about love is love. But all of the memes, right? All the stuff that, you know, I can get off, you know, I can go off and be like, oh, well, like, this is stupid because of X. And no, this is wrong because of Y. I mean, I can kind of play that intellectual game, but it's like all precognitive. It's all pre in a way. You know, it's like, I remember in graduate school, there was this expression that the postmodernists would always use, like, something is always already happening, right? And I used, you know, and you can kind of make fun of it, like the 90th time you see a philosopher cart this sort of thing out. But I think what I've learned in this little corner, you know, is that, and through Peterson and all these kinds of things, is that, you know, we experience culture as always already happening, right? And so, you know, my kids, my students experience all of these things that you and I might look at as novel developments, right? But they're experiencing them as always already on, like, it's just there.
That's like, their first draft.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's exactly right. It's already there. And, you know, so I see a lot of pretend on the part of adults as to what our kids are swimming in.
Well, if I don't, if I'm okay with what they're swimming in, then it's easier for me to spend time on my phone.
Right. Well, that's
for me, it's the truly fascinating bit is we're, as far as we know, setting precedent as far as the species being exposed to global communication. And you think of it along the lines of back in the day, the rural world was defined by the people around you.
Yeah.
And so, like, you could aspire to be the best of whatever you do around there. Mm-hmm. But once Seth came in and the global awareness began, then, like, staying, living your life on a farm.
The people around us are the people on Seth.
Became weighed against all the possible opportunities broadcast to you. Like, you could be doing this.
The girl next door, the local beauty, well, she's nothing compared to the fembots on Selling Sunset. They're in my sermon on Sunday.
This instead.
Well, and I remember that for me, myself, like, personally, you know, I grew up in a kind of sleepy suburban town, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I remember, the Oracle showing up once a month. You know, you'd go on down to the record store and you'd buy, like, Rolling Stone magazine, and, like, it was a node or a portal, you know, into a whole world that was cooler, sexier, you know, more fun. It was all these things that Baton Rouge, my suburban Baton Rouge life, was not. Right?
Cooler, sexier, more fun. Again, these are kind of the conjunction between spirits and appetites,
right? And so, like, that idea is an existing one, right? But the hyper immersion maybe is sort of at least it's making me see it a little bit differently now. I don't know if you see it differently.
I have these moments where I remember what it was like before the net was in my head, like the physical sensation of it.
And I don't think I do. That's interesting. I don't think I have a memory of it.
Well, I think you still get outside more.
Oh,
see, and I'm 10 years older than these guys, and so I have more memory of life without the net.
Okay.
But I have no memory of life without Set.
It's true. But, I do.
There's so this notion that I started with, the summum bonum.
Yep.
I think those come through literature quite often. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can read it right, Dune will do it to you, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. And I don't know if this is accurate because I've never personally read it, but I understand that it's somewhere in, like, the Brothers Karamazov or whatnot.
Now, what Grimm just did there, it's easy to catastrophize up until that point when Grimm starts talking about the summum bonum. Because the reality is, and this is very Augustinian, that all of these spirits that capture us have to use good. They can't be completely devoid of some good, because they use that good to gain purchase of us and to somehow hook us. They really can't have a hook without having, at least beneath piles of manipulation and corruption and all of this stuff, at least some real thing, some real good, because without that, they simply come apart. And so this is part of the hope that even in the midst of the fact of all of this conflict of spirits, there is good down beneath it. And of course, I'm preaching on the book of Colossians, sort of the second main section of the book, where Jesus defeats the principalities and powers, and he does this on the cross. And of course, he does this in sort of the inversion of all of the normal hooks that get into us, and he does the unthinkable, which is
the most reliable source of meaning is responsible self-sacrificial conduct. And so here's something very cool. I went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre with Jonathan.
Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and he's got the resurrection and the crucifixion mixed up, but that's okay. There it is. It's right there. It's right at the Jesus. Jesus snuck in under all of these spirits and started planting something that over time has just kept colonizing the world, even through secularism. It begins to sort of reshape our moral sensibilities to, well, it's the little bits of Buddhism that look like Jesus. It's the little bits of Islam that look like Jesus. It's the little bits of all these other things that begin to look like Jesus. And we begin to get a taste for it. And bit by bit, by bit, by bit, by bit, it colonizes. That doesn't mean that, let's see, I just did that male thing, right? I just went from one thing to the other. I'm talking real fast. It doesn't mean that the situation isn't grim at times. Of course it is. It doesn't mean that there aren't horrible casualties. Of course it is. And again, this earlier part where he says to Michael, he says, you know, there are, sometimes the world comes apart and you're too old to be around to see it out. It's exactly what happens in the book of Numbers again. But even though the world has sort of sped up and we have all of these platforms, at first mass media and now micro media and social media and doing all of this, and the spirits are just sort of running around doing their numbers. And then the question is, well, how can you not be in bondage to these things? And again, I'm a Christian minister, so, you know, here comes the pitch. I don't even have to say it now that I told you what the pitch, because you know exactly what the pitch is, because this is already all over the world. And it doesn't mean that Christians are immune to this, and it doesn't mean that Christians don't get triggered by it or take the wrong side or any of those things. Christians certainly do, but it does mean we are not without hope. And it does mean we are not without resources, because he has overcome the world. So, didn't quite know where this video was going to go or what it would be. Nobody's come to the estuary. Maybe I'll have an estuary meeting that fails tonight. I don't know. I didn't put it out too early. I really have to get better at scheduling these things. And, you know, like I said, we might start doing them on Sunday mornings, which I think would be really good. Just a regular time every week. And whether I'm there or not, we'll probably start in January. And whether I'm there or not, just a few people getting together, and we'll see what happens with it. So leave a comment. Let me know what you think.